Totally Football Show. A midweek that had some of the strangest sights in football. From nine-man Ten Hag and an eight-goal gasm at the Bridge to Kyle Walker playing a goal to Arsenal playing a European fixture on a Wednesday. Luckily, we've got it all rounded up for you here. Plus, the weekend to look forward to as well. What's coming up there? Only Liverpool and Man City's title tilt and Leicester Arsenal and the Cherries, the Blades and Brighton all bidding to go top five. Phew! A big preview of all of that in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. In the studio today, fresh from that goals show, it's James Horncastle.
Hello, James. Hello, listener.
Pat Nevins here, fresh back from Stamford Bridge, Dramedy Central on Tuesday night.
It is brilliant fun watching them.
We haven't even said hello to Duncan Alexander yet.
Hello, James.
And his digits of fun.
Yeah.
All right, I bet we got some...
hello. Hang on.
I bet we got some top stats coming up today, haven't we?
Possibly.
And let's just have a quick roundup of what happened in Match day four of the Champions League, because basically a lot happened. You had 56 goals, three teams qualifying for the knockout stages, and at least half a dozen game of the season contenders. Dinamo Zagreb, for example, against Shakhtar. Dinamo were 3-1 up with 90 minutes played. What happened, James?
They saw out the win.
No, it finished 3-3. Inter were two goals up at Dortmund. They ended up losing 3-2.
It pains me, all this stuff, because obviously our friend Michael Cox is espousing this season that 2-0 or a two-goal lead is the most dangerous thing in football, and it isn't. Statistically, it is not, but every week teams are backing him up.
But what is the most dangerous?
1-0.
1-0.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah.
But anyway, what else did we have midweek in the Champions League? Kyle Walker doing an Ian Walker for Man City away at San Siro. Spurs, who never win away from home, go to the most unwelcoming ground possible and win away from home. 4-0, complete with the most 80s goal possible. We'll discuss that game very shortly. Slavia Prague holding Barcelona to an entirely goalless draw. And at the opposite end of the spectrum, that 4-4 draw between Chelsea and Ajax. And Pat, you were there. Did you have fun?
Ajax have only one thought in their minds. Let's just attack from as many angles as we possibly can, and let's close down and let's play madly positive football. Even when it's 4-4, even when you're down to nine men, even when you're away from home, they were playing high up the field pressing game against Chelsea. It was mental.
Yeah, three of Ajax's five shots on target actually came after they had the two men sent off. So they had four goals, obviously two own goals.
Is a nine-man team the most dangerous team that you can
face?
Not
a chance. It seems
so, yeah.
So you say it was very difficult in the opening 15, 20 minutes to have any idea of the tactical setups, but what did Ajax do that was so successful in the face of what looked like a sterling Chelsea comeback?
Well, the first thing is the stats were quite misleading because they actually played brilliantly. Ajax were miles the better team. Well, the one stat that wasn't misleading was they were 4-1 up, and they should have been 4-1 up. They played that well. Chelsea actually weren't playing particularly well at that point in time, but they've got great spirit and great fight about them. But when they went down to nine men, the expectation, everybody knows what you do. If you go down to 10 men, you go 4-3-2 or 4-4-1. You know, you just leave one less forward. And it's a static defensive position. You can come sometimes go 3-3-3. But when you get down to 9 men, all bets are off. And I was looking out to see what they were doing tactically. Nothing. They just chased the ball. And then they just chased the ball really high up the pitch. And it was absolutely stunning. They made it into an elongated five-a-side game like you would play with your mates. And Chelsea were stunned by it. They had no idea how to react to it in that situation. They got a corner kick at one point. Right near the end of the game, Ajax 4-4, pressing Chelsea at this point. And Chelsea had every man back. You know, you're playing against nine men, guys. You don't need every man back.
It's also almost like Chelsea are a very young team with the fifth worst defence in the Premier League, and Ajax thought they could be got at. Yeah.
Possibly so. What about the double red card? I mean, it's remarkable because 4-1 up. Actually, I think Chelsea had pulled it back to 4-2 when that crucial passage of play happened where you had one red card, then immediately following another red card for handball, and then the penalty for the handball offence. Ajax feeling that essentially the game had been taken away from them with that. Were they right to be furious?
Yeah, I mean, in the sense that it's very unusual, sort of triple jeopardy, but technically by the letter of the law, the ref did it right. So,
okay, fair.
I have to say the referee was, actually not the referee, unusually, the near side stand assistant was abysmal beyond belief. Not for or against Chelsea, just generally abysmal.
Generally.
If he got anything, any decision he had to make, he would try and make it and get it brilliantly 100% wrong. So he wasn't involved in those decisions, so they were probably right.
Pat, we get to talk about Chelsea quite a lot on this show. Ajax, not so much. So who really stood out? Who did you most enjoy?
Is it Ziyech?
Ziyech.
Yeah. Honestly, his... Do you know that thing about the kind of Dutch supposed to be really arrogant? And it doesn't matter if you are Dutch or not, you're just playing for a Dutch team. And he scores a goal and he gives it the whole Zlatan, the kind of looking around, kind of look at, do you know how good I am? To be fair, it was a cracker of a goal from...
He didn't score that goal, though. That was Kepa's face that scored.
Exactly, but he's claiming it. Right. Well, he was claiming it at that point.
He provoked two on goal.
To be fair, it wasn't a bad delivery, I'll give you that.
His passing all day, or even
delivery. Yeah, delivery was absolutely brilliant. So, I mean, absolutely, that was the case. Funnily enough, promised the other side, he was good as well. Mm. Just all the way through the team, they wanted to play football. They wanted to attack. They made one really good tactical, technical change, which was, is it Dest, who's the right fullback, American player, and he plays most weeks at right fullback, but he's playing against, inverted commas, Captain America, and he's dropped. And they bring this guy, Mazraoui, and he's just quick. And of course, it was exactly the right thing to do, and it worked a treat for them, and he played really well as well. So there was good technical things going on, but it was more than that. It was just the ethos. It was just the Ajax ethos of, we're just going to keep on attacking.
Right.
We're just going to keep on. And I was in love with them by the end of the game.
Magnificent stuff. It does leave the group very delicately poised, because with Valencia beating Lille that same evening, you've got Valencia, Chelsea and Ajax all level on 7 points, and Chelsea go to the Mestalla to face Valencia in the next round of matches in 3 weeks' time. This weekend, meantime, at Stamford Bridge, no doubt on their way to notching up a similarly high-scoring spectacle, are Crystal Palace. Jorginho's going to be suspended for that game, which is a shame, because his renaissance has been key to their wonderful run of form.
Right, well, I'm going to disagree, because if you go back to my teams on this show last season, know that I don't think this is a renaissance. He's always been this good.
Okay,
I completely think. And you're right to say it, because even the Chelsea fans booed him all the way through last season. And I was saying, well, I'm giving him my player of the season. They were saying, what, above Hazard? I was saying, yeah.
Right. So he was always this good even last season?
Yes, always this good. The stats build it. I don't know if the stats from last season, who played the most through balls in the Premier League last season? It was a certain Mr. D. Luiz, now of Arsenal. And the second most through balls, and by the way, I'm not talking Chelsea, I'm talking Premier League,
right.
Second most through balls, Jorginho.
So the difference is now there are people on the end who make use of them?
Number one, that. Number two, he's not playing as many little side-to-side balls, the Sarri ball way.
Right.
It's just been a little bit more direct, and people kind of like that a bit more. But he is now by far ahead in most through balls.
And number three is no longer seen as the Sarri envoy on the pitch, as a sort of lightning rod for any unhappiness.
He's also a leader, and I think a lot of people didn't expect that of him. He's someone who's always talking, always bollocking teammates.
So what happens when he's not there this weekend?
Is the correct question.
All right, Kante, the biggest talker of all, comes in, you know.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I don't think they can play the same way.
Right.
I really don't. So they're going to have to find another method. Fortunately for them, as you say, Kante could well be available and fit for it. And they have got fairly good backup at Chelsea. But it's one of those ones, there's certain players at certain teams you don't want to miss. You know, at Liverpool, it's obviously Van Dijk. There's, you know, De Bruyne, the way it's say. At Chelsea, for me, whatever you say about anyone else, it is Jorginho.
You know, a year in to his life in the Premier League, he's adapted. You know, I think that was coming to a new league, a faster paced league as well, took him some time.
This is why I disagree. I stand by, but
you have to say that a year's experience in this division has helped.
And did you see him showing his mum around Stamford Bridge the other day? She was on the touchline pretending to be a substitute, warming up, doing stretches. It was good.
During the game?
No, like midweek, but, you know, she was very excited to be on the turf and he was very excited to see his mum stretching.
And he said, this is what we do when we're substitutes.
Well, she just took it, you know, she just decided to do it off her own
Maybe
bat.
Frank can register her for this game and she can just...
Mrs. Jorginho.
Stand in, Frank.
She looked like she could thread through a decent through ball, to be fair, so, yeah.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Let's have a word now for Spurs, who also scored 4 goals. This was on Wednesday, and picked up their first away win in 183 days. James, this was pretty entertaining as well.
Pretty chaotic in parts. I mean, look no further than the opening goal, which was just magnificent in terms of, you know, how many times can you try and score without scoring in the same move, you know, in terms of hitting the post, goal line clearance, hitting the bar, and then, you know, Lo Celso ending up putting it in.
I was watching an old episode of Saint and Greavesy last weekend because I live a very exciting life. And every goal in that, in their roundup of the week's action, was essentially that Spurs goal last night.
That was English football in the 80s.
Yeah. I mean, you did feel that Danny Baker should be linking off the back of it. Morgan writes in, he says, hey, I have a question. After Lo Celso's goal, what is the pod's favourite ridiculous goal? I would vote for the one against Liverpool, the beach ball goal. Do you remember at Sunderland?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Do you have I sprung that on you a little.
Did Chicharito score on with his face?
Yeah. Yeah. That's that one. I think there's
which wasn't a header.
Did a Kepa.
Exactly. There's a QPR Man City game from the early 90s, I think, at Loftus Road, where it makes the Spurs goal look like Brazil 1970, because if there were four shots in the Spurs one, there's probably about 15 in this goal. It takes forever.
Right.
It's regularly linked to on like Italian Twitter accounts saying, ha-ha, look at English football. So fair yeah. play to us.
It's actually, I think the clip is called The Worst Pattern of Football Ever.
Yeah.
Something like that.
It genuinely is.
Yeah.
All right, good. So, but that got them underway, and they ended up winning 4-0. And as I mentioned, this is a team with a terrible record on the road.
Yeah, going to the Maracanã, where Red Star had not lost in the Champions League European Cup to an English opponent ever before. Arsenal, of course, went there a couple of years ago and won in the Europa League when Wenger was, you know, still the greatest Arsenal manager that we've ever seen, and, you know, should be going back to Arsenal sometime
before he
soon.
Became the greatest Bayern Munich manager.
Well, perhaps, James.
Perhaps that's a subject we'll touch on later on.
If you go back, you talk about that Red Star game. I was at the Man United game there, and when they went over, no, Liverpool game.
The Liverpool exactly a year ago.
Exactly a year ago. So I was at that game at that stadium, and basically, they're not very good, Red Star. But the stadium is.
This is the slight issue with the game last night. If you think back a couple of weeks ago, Spurs comfortably beat Red Star at home, and everyone said, well, that's sorted out. Now Spurs are back, and then they took 1 point from the next two Premier League games. Now, they played well last night, but I don't think this necessarily translates into a full recovery in the Premier League. The quality of the Premier League now is so high that you can see teams, Arsenal are in disarray, will go away to Frankfurt and win comfortably.
You're saying that just now, right? And I got a laugh because I was at the Spurs versus the Everton game, and everyone ever says the phrase, oh, the standard's so high. It was one of the worst games of football I've ever seen in my entire life. It was not just boring and dull, it was technically awful, and the players were technically awful.
Well, this weekend, I'm sure no one will be levelling that charge at their fixture as they take on Chris Wilder's remarkable Sheffield United. Again, it's a game we'll touch on a little bit later on. Sheffield United, one of those teams that could legitimately finish the weekend in fifth place, which is... That's the reality we live in now.
Yeah.
Better get used to it.
The new world order.
Just to round out one or two of the other big talking points around the Champions League round of matches. Liverpool now top of their group after they beat Genk narrowly. Napoli, who they host next time, only drew at home to Red Bull, sparking all sorts of trouble there. There's a lot of talk that Carlo Ancelotti might be on his way this week.
Yeah, quite sensational, even within the context of a crazy Champions League week, that you would also have a mutiny going on, because the Napoli players were told after the defeat to Roma last weekend that they were going to have to basically live at the training ground, weren't allowed to go home, extra training sessions, and not just before this game against Salzburg, but extended into the weekend as well. And after the draw against Salzburg, they just got in their cars and went home, breaking. Yeah.
So Di Laurentiis' son, Edu, comes down to the dressing room to tell them they have to stick around. And was it Insigne who stepped up? No, or Alan, I think, who there was some suggestions that there was even a bit of a kind of...
Coming together.
And the players went, no. And now, so Di Laurentiis, the owner, senior, has said that he's going to fine the players and also possibly take legal action against his own team.
Yeah, I mean, that is Italian football in a nutshell. But Ancelotti had come out, of course, on Monday to say, I disagree with the president for taking this kind of action. He then didn't, well, it seems he didn't stand in the way of the players breaking this ritiro, as they call it.
Detention.
Yeah. And there was a statement put out, as you mentioned, on Wednesday, where the club basically stressed that they might take legal action. There was certainly that inference in there. And they were saying, right, it's up to Ancelotti now, whether he keeps them in detention or not. And so essentially, Ancelotti's being invited to go against the president again, which, yeah, I think is one of the reasons why the tension there is so high. It doesn't seem at the moment as though there's going to be an imminent decision on Ancelotti's future. I think that, but it just goes to show how long can this relationship, which is very fraught, survive?
Well, indeed.
Does this not go down to European law? You can't do that.
De Laurentiis is taking back control.
Retiro means retiro.
I'm not sure, Pat, because they've been doing it kind of without legal challenge for years in Italy.
Yeah, you try. I promise you cannot do that in England.
No, in England, but in Italy...
But it's European law, isn't it?
You take it to law.
If you take that to law, you'll win it. It's 100%.
More as we know more about Carlo down at... down in Naples. Other big stories included the return of Real Madrid. And Pat, you will allow that this is a renaissance, a team that had only narrowly squeaked to a 2-2 draw in their last Champions League home match against Bruges. This time, coming up with a 6-0 win against Galatasaray, featuring an extraordinary hat-trick from the 19-year-old, is he, Rodrigo?
Yeah. 18.
Yeah.
Just, wow. I'm not saying he is... the new Neymar or whoever, you know, that's what he's been called.
You wouldn't wish that on him, would you, Pat?
Because it wasn't me that said it. It was because he's come from Santos and all that sort of stuff. You know, you come in, I think he's got about 80 games in his career so far, and he's managed to go and start that game. He destroyed Gala at the start.
Well, you have to feel for Vinicius Jr., who came in as the new Neymar stroke, whoever, and his tenure in that position lasted, what, about 6 months? And he's already been replaced by the new.
I have to say, I didn't think that of him
at the time. No.
But I'm looking at this kid, having seen just a very, very little of him, and thinking, I'll not be surprised.
It was a magnificent hat-trick.
It was a perfect hat-trick
as well. Yeah, he got the first two goals within about 2.5 minutes of each other in the opening 5 or 6 minutes. Alex Smith pointing out that he would have had a chance for the quickest Champions League hat-trick of all time because Real Madrid were awarded a penalty not long after he got a brace. But of course, Ramos took that.
And he panenka'd it as well.
What was it, a panenka? Because it didn't even... It was still rising as it hit the top of the net.
It was better than a panenka.
I would say it's a new category.
He then proceeded to imitate Ronaldo's celebration as well, which...
Is that allowed? Yeah. They're not a trademark in that.
Well, all sorts of people are stepping on Ronaldo's toes at the moment, including Aaron Ramsey.
Maybe the assist was as impressive as anything else from Rodrigo.
Right.
He made an assist in... just before he scored, no, actually, just after he scored his second goal. And when it's the timing of him playing the ball that made my eyes go, wow, not many people would have done that. A, the vision and awareness to see it, but the timing of the pass was really strange. What? And that's special.
Can you paint a picture?
Well, he's gone down the right wing, maybe just around about the penalty box. And instead of taking an extra touch to go a little bit wider, because he's got the pace on the guy and then curling it around like you wouldn't, he just turns and zips it. And it's like, why did you do that? That's too strange, too early to play that ball. No one thinks that way. Strikers think that way because they take, like Harry Kane takes a shot earlier than you expect, all that sort of stuff. It's a very similar technical thing. But people don't generally do it as a cross. And he did it. It's a very, very strange thing to see. And as soon as you see someone doing something technically different from the norm, you think, wow, there's a brain there. Something good. I just think he could be... I mean, it's a very short thing. It's Gala, it's 6-0, it's home, but he could be very, very special.
It's amazing to think, hat-trick, 18 years old, that assist. He's probably only about 2 minutes away of bad performance from getting booed by the home fans.
He's the second youngest player ever to score a hat-trick in the Champions League. Do you know who the youngest was?
Raul?
It was Raul. Also, Real Madrid.
Two of the youngest four have come this season. Haaland as well. We are in a golden age of new strikers.
Haaland scored for Red Bull Salzburg.
He did, yes. Yeah.
He's now only 5 Champions League goals behind Roy Keane, and I'm looking forward to when they draw level, given the family feud.
I think he's only one goal now behind Solskjaer and Tor Andre Flo as having the best... most prolific Champions League campaign by a Norwegian. And of course, it's only the group stages. Mm-hmm. So if Salzburg get out, there you go.
And you can't rule that out.
No, you can't.
You can't. Barcelona, although they are 4 points behind Napoli, who are second place behind.
But Napoli in mutiny, James. That's they might true. Not even have a team if they take legal action. You know, so
they might still be in retiro. Who knows? Barcelona got held 0-0 at home to Slavia at home. That does not happen very often. And Slavia more than deserved that point. They are now 1 point clear of Dortmund, with Inter 3 points further back from the Germans. Inter, who I saw a spectacular rant from their manager, Antonio Conte. This will shock you, Pat. Mm-hmm. But after the game, Conte responded to the defeat by suggesting it was the board of directors' fault for not buying him more players and they should get down and explain it to the cameras.
No, it doesn't shock me.
All right.
As you
right.
well know.
That storm is going to... You know, he's lit a bit of blue touch paper there, hasn't he, Conte?
He has, but he lit it back in July because he's pretty much been saying the same thing over and over again, whilst also like having the caveat, I'm not making excuses.
Right.
I don't need reassuring. I'm not a demanding manager.
Right.
Whilst demanding three signings.
How many times did Inter break their transfer record this summer?
Twice.
Right.
Yeah, I think net spend was like 110 million. So.
Right. Okay, well, it is true that they do seem to be a little short of puff. They had a brilliant first hour against Barcelona, ended up losing, and exactly the same story away at Dortmund this Tuesday night, and their continuation in this competition very much at risk. By contrast, Juventus, they do play the long game. 94th minute when they finally got the winner away at Lokomotiv Moscow. What a goal it was, James.
Yeah, one of the goals of the night from Douglas Costa. Just, I think, one of the best dribblers in world football on his day as well. But combination with Higuain, the back heel, just after Costa had beaten three players anyway, Higuain sets him up with the back heel. He beats another two more and then goes around the goalkeeper and makes it 2-1. I saw arguably the most Italian piece of analysis I've ever seen last night, which was at the end of the Champions League roundup show that they do in Italy. They're asked to basically name what their best bit and worst bit of the night was. And Fabio Capello said Aaron Ramsey's substitution, which I thought...
For what?
The best bit. And I was like, that sounds damning. And yeah, it wasn't. He respected how Ramsey, when his number was flagged up, ran off the pitch, didn't shake his head at all, encouraged his teammate when he came off and said, that's the kind of professionalism and character I want to see from a player when they're taken off. And then he said his worst bit was when Ronaldo gets taken off. And Ronaldo is kind of sulking, sort of kind of really kind of padding his way over and then has some back chat with Sarri. So yeah, very, very Capello, very Italian analysis there.
Of course, Ronaldo was a little bit gloomy. Why?
Because he thought he'd scored a free kick and yet he hadn't, because Ramsey just nipped it over the line before it, just to make sure.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest of free kicks, but Guilherme, the locomotive keeper, had let it dribble between his legs and it was trickling towards the line when Ramsey arrived to just nudge it over.
Reminiscent of that time Ronaldo nearly scored an amazing solo goal for Portugal and then Nani knocked it in on the goal and made it offside. Ronaldo just went, hey, these things happen, and moved on.
There's a great photo actually of Ronaldo, or a series of photos of Ramsey going up with his hands up as if to say, oops, sorry, boss. And Ronaldo does then kind of give him a rueful kind of eyes raised, like, yeah, but let's not make a habit of this. Excellent stuff. So Juve goes through. They're now in the last 16. So are Paris Saint-Germain, who had a 1-0 win against Bruges. And Bayern Munich threw off to their 2-0 win over Olympiacos under their interim manager, Hansi Flick. Who's going to be the long-term boss? That's a subject we'll touch on later on, because after this, we need to get on to what's happening at Anfield on Sunday afternoon.
Liverpool versus Man City. A real six-pointer. It's going to be...
Sorry, what do you mean six-pointer? Does the winner get 6 points?
It's a saying.
So the winner does get...
The team that wins gets 3 points and the team that loses also drops 3 points. So it's a net gain of six for the winner.
Oh, so it's still just a three-pointer?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Right.
And Paddy Power are offering money back as a free bet on all markets if Man City win. Paddy Power, home of the money back special. Applies to all markets on this match only. Max free bet £10. Pre-match singles only. Online exclusive. No shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Sunday afternoon, and how about this for a grand finale of what's been a pretty special week? Liverpool taking on Man City, the top two in the Premier League, the team that has essentially redefined our ideas of Premier League perfection, against the only side that can, I guess, hope to challenge them right now, and is indeed 6 points clear of them right now. It's their second meeting of the season. City took the Community Shield on penalties. This time around, though, as I mentioned, they are trailing, and they haven't scored at Anfield in three of their past four league visits.
I mean, they had a very good chance to this time last year, was it, when Riyad Mahrez missed that penalty?
Didn't score.
And Liverpool's home record as well in that time, I mean, it was probably its most vulnerable in that moment. Still intact, James.
Still just intact.
Just to put into context how long Liverpool haven't lost at home for, the four managers, away managers, to win there in the Klopp era are Sam Allardyce, Paul Clement, Louis van Gaal and Alan Pardew, which sort of redolent of a different...
Is that three English managers there?
Yeah.
Ah, we can
there
see
you go,
weakness.
Man City. You know,
get Pard then.
Get Pard, it's Pardiola to come in. Yeah, okay. For that one day only.
That is remarkable. Neither of the two teams looked that convincing midweek, but fair to suggest they probably have one eye already on this fixture. Liverpool, as I mentioned, a 2-1 win over Genk. And City, with their 1-1 draw away to bottom of that group, Atalanta. We haven't talked about that game yet, Duncan.
No. Well, I think, for me, an outfield player going in goal is the greatest thing that can ever happen in football. And it's very rare nowadays, given if a keeper gets injured, you bring on the subkeeper. If a keeper gets sent off, you bring on the subkeeper for someone else. We had the lovely scenario there where Claudio Bravo came on for the injured Edison. 35 minutes, no saves, one red card. That was...
Goal conceded.
Yes.
for that, it was great.
But yeah, you know, apart from that, he did do a catch, I saw. And then, so yeah, Kyle Walker had to go and goal.
Right.
And face a free kick, yep, which he sort of saved.
He did save it.
Yeah, like you might...
Did better than Guilherme for locomotive.
It looked like it stung his hands.
Right.
But then he didn't have to save anything else.
Well, he ended up with more saves than Claudio Bravo and Edison combined.
Mm. One save.
Yeah, but which is more.
So yeah, he, no, but yeah, still, I mean, that was the surprising thing, that Atalanta were going to have 10 minutes to try and expose or take advantage of the fact that, you know, Kyle Walker was in goal and they weren't able to get another shot on target.
City's killing of the game was superb.
That's the worst, possibly the worst team in the world to do it, to maybe Barca aside, to play against an outfield player in goal is Manchester City, because Manchester City keep the ball for so long. It kind of doesn't, you know, you've heard the phrase often enough, probably didn't need a keeper today for City, because there was no attacks and they had so much, so little pressure against them. And they are the perfect team to actually have an outfield player in goal.
Pep, what? After the game, said that playing against Atalanta is a bit like going to the dentist.
Yes.
So, we're having two goalkeepers removed. Is that, are they like your wisdom teeth or, I don't know?
Well, Sterling had opened the scoring and then they had the chance to make it 2-0 when they were awarded a penalty. Tom Williams commenting, Gabriel Jesus channeling his inner Diana Ross with that attempt. Then
the goal didn't collapse, unfortunately. Yeah,
and then Atalanta awoke and grabbed themselves what turned out to be a point from this game. And who knows, eh, James? Who knows?
Well, I'm hoping. I mean, on Italian TV afterwards, they were quite critical of Josip Iličić, who provokes Bravo's red card, essentially going down when he goes past the goalkeeper. If he stays on his feet, he's got an open goal, he scores, they win the game, and yeah, their prospects of going through are obviously much much greater than they are at this moment in time. So
it's a difference in VAR. So as a professional footballer, I would have booked the player. I wouldn't have given the free kick, and I wouldn't have sent the goalkeeper off. I'd have booked the forward.
You felt that there wasn't contact?
Oh, there was contact. He threw his boot out at the keeper.
Yeah, on the second leg, but was there not contact before that?
No, I think he jumped out of the way and threw his left boot out.
It's a game of opinions, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and I'm happy to look at it again and check it again.
Right.
I was watching it on a tiny little screen when I got back in last night, so right, it looked like that to me.
Beyond what happened on Wednesday, big question about Edison now for the weekend. We heard that Guardiola took him off as a preventative measure. But if he doesn't return to fitness in time for the Liverpool game, how big a blow is that to City's chances? How much of a quality gap is it down to Claudio Bravo?
Fairly large, I'd say. Bravo in his Premier League career has let in 27 goals and made 37 saves. So that's, you know, closer to 50% than you'd hope as a goalkeeper. I think if he does play, then, you know, the likes of Alexander-Arnold will, you know, be keen to,
right,
to target him.
Claudio.
Yeah. See, I love stats, right?
Yeah.
And I study stats a wee bit back in the days. But I always have to caveat them.
Mm.
And my caveat with this, specifically the goalkeepers from Manchester City, is that because of the way Manchester City play, when you get a chance against them, it's a cracker of a chance.
Mm.
Because they have pushed forward, you're probably one and one with a keeper. And it has always been the case in Manchester City in the Pep's time that a save from Man City is totally different from a save from everyone else. So it sounds like you're saying he's a terrible keeper because of those stats. In comparison to other keepers, he's making different types of saves.
But I think he does inspire more fear in his defence.
I would agree with that, but I think... Any kind of
change as well is disrupting the rhythms. Yeah. Although it's been a fairly interchangeable back line anyway for City, and we saw against Atlanta the fact that it is way less resolute than you would have
expected.
Well,
and also a point on Bravo. I mean, his defining game in City's shirt was a big game at the time. It's not so much a big game anymore, against Manchester United, where... Yeah, that was pretty much it for Pep Guardiola. He called it there, and was it Big Willie Caballero ended up coming in? And that was the main problem position that they addressed that summer, bringing in Edison. So
of course he can call on the Liverpool icon Scott Carson, who's now at City.
All right, yeah. So that would be next in line after,
and of course Walker.
And of course Walker, right. If Liverpool win this...
The stats are great.
It's November. You can't win the Premier League title in November, but can you lose it, etc. and so on?
Yeah, I mean, you can lose it all the time, James.
Right.
May, so okay. You can lose it there. It depends how close it is, but
what do you think about this weekend?
I have a suspicion that City will win this game at Anfield. I think they will break the... that unbeaten record that Liverpool have there. I still think Sterling at this moment in time is in such a rich vein of form. And right. he was again, I mean, Atalanta are just glad to see him gone and that they don't have to play him again, because he can do pretty much anything. He can play he can do what he wants at the moment in time. So,
although he has, since he left Liverpool to go to City, not had a shot on target or created a goal at Anfield when he's gone back.
Well, so, now's really? The time. Now's the time.
Could be.
Remarkable. Do you share, Pat, James's faith that City are going to claw back 3 fat points on the leaders?
No. The reason being, a slight fear for City in this one. Silva fan, I'll admit, complete bias.
Which one?
David. He's just amazing, amazing player. So he's not available. You've got problems in defence. We all know about that as well. I adore City and I love the way they play football, but I'm not sure they're at their best at the moment.
It's when you least expect it.
Yeah. And you're right. It might come. And I think for the league, it would be good if they won the game.
Mm.
And I would like to see it purely for that. Nothing against Liverpool, because I'm a Toffee and a Chelsea, but not purely for the interest of the league. Because if you do that and Leicester win, actually, suddenly you think, whoa, this is interesting again.
Yeah.
I'm probably in the middle, I think. I think the big, yeah.
A draw.
Yeah, I think it could be a draw. Yeah.
Tepid waters are there, fire and ice.
Exactly. Mm. But I think if you think back to this fixture last season, which was in October, both teams were defending brilliantly. They'd hardly let in any goals all season. That's not the case now. And I think we could be looking at one of the games we saw from the previous season, like in the Champions League.
The 4-3.
Klopp, does he go out and try and play Liverpool style? The way they always play every week at Anfield? And if he does, which I think he should do, and get a 9-point gap, or does he play a little bit cagey, like they've done before against City?
I think he goes... Guardiola's lost 7 times against Klopp, which is more than he has against any other manager. And it is because Liverpool do play full out against City, or whoever.
So does the Ox get a start?
I think his style now and his playing, his standard is now up there. You know, I would like to see him play. Has given the goal in the Champions League there. I mean, that was absolutely magnificent. Mm. Back to goal, swivel, turn, power, whack. So, yes, I think it's a very good shout.
It's a huge game. In a week of unusual sights, who can fail to have been moved by the announcement that Liverpool are going to be playing 2 games in 2 days in 2 continents, such as their fixture condition.
How will they do it?
Well, essentially like Phil Collins, I think. They're going to have Concorde on the tarmac at Heathrow and then fly across and appear in the other place. Where is it? They've got FIFA World Cup on the 18th. That's the World Club Cup semi. And the day before that, they've got the League Cup quarter-final against Aston Villa. But, of course, they're going to play 2 different teams, which is going to be a bit peculiar. Who gets in which team, do you think?
I think the League Cup team will be the youth team.
Right.
Under 23 lads, and then the main guys will be over for the World Club Cup, even though that's probably the easier game, the semi-final.
Right. Okay, but yeah.
This could actually get worse, couldn't it? Mm. I mean, what we're hearing that they're going to do, the World Club Cup's going to be a whole bigger tournament now. It's going to be moved to a time where it actually might hit with AFCON as well.
Mm.
So... although we already know that there are too many games and too many competitions, you're asking too much for the top players, they're adding more. the Nations League with that on top of it.
It sets a bit of a bad precedent, really, because, you know, clubs can no longer...
It's unusual for football to have a bad precedent in FIFA.
Because if there's fixture pile-up, then... You know, organisers can go, well, yeah, but organisers can go, will you manage to play two different teams?
Right.
Can we not just get rid of the League Cup? Can we not just get rid of two teams in the Premier League? Can we not just get rid of the Community Shield? I mean,
you heartless.
These are
heartless
also valid points. Man. And make games 60 minutes because that would certainly ease the congestion.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we need fans, really?
So, on the subject of Liverpool's busy schedule, and I raised the question of what a Liverpool win might mean for the title race, a 9-point gap with City. Whatever happens this weekend, they do face an incredibly testing period. 12 games in 37 days between the 23rd of November and the 2nd of January, even for a team as fired up and full of energy as the Klopp-inspired Reds, that's going to be testing.
Mm. Well, if you think last season, Liverpool went out of the League Cup in the first game, of the FA Cup in their first game, and obviously, yeah, they got to the Champions League final, but that did help in terms of staying fresh after Christmas, and this season is going to be very, very different.
All right. Well, we're going to move on now, but we are going to talk more about Sunday's clash at Anfield in our two live shows. Look at this. In Dublin on Friday and Belfast on Saturday, which will see Duncan, you joining me with Michael Cox and Julien Laurens for a road trip.
Crack.
Across some are now calling the Island of Ireland.
The British Isles, I think they like to call it.
Right.
I did the Dublin one with you lot last time.
You did.
And it was brilliant. So anyone who's listening, get there. It would be great.
And it'll be all the same material, so, you know.
I hope Turtleneck Guy is in the audience.
That would be fantastic.
That would be great.
Wouldn't it? Hopes, you know, whoever's, we're just happy that people come along. If you want to, only a few tickets left, hashtag TFS Live for your questions, and you might win yourself a Sony Xperia tablet, courtesy of our friends at Football Manager. Last few tickets, it says here, are at thetotallyfootballshow.com/events. Now, right behind the top two, or 2 points by Man City anyway, are Leicester and Chelsea. We're going to chat about them after this. Listener, could get really interesting, the Premier League table after this weekend, because only 2 points behind the top two are Leicester and Chelsea. And then behind them, you've got a 4-point gap to Arsenal in fifth, a 4-point gap which could widen to a chasm-esque 7 points after this weekend's action, because Leicester are going to be hosting Arsenal Saturday tea time. Now, Arsenal midweek were held to a miserable 1-1 draw away in rainy Guimaraes against Vitória in a Europa League game that was brought forward because of regulations and
things. Closest that Arsenal come to playing sort of what, Champions League-ish football?
Wow. That might well be.
In a long, long time, yeah. I think.
It's a truth, but a bitter one. Mm. It's the fourth time in a row that Arsenal have taken the lead in a fixture and then failed to win. And it's piled the pressure even further on their manager, Unai Emery. How key is this match for them?
Very key.
Very key.
I mean, Arsenal come out with the, you know, we're not going to make any decisions now, but everyone knows in football, one big defeat can make a massive difference. And Leicester look like a team who are fully capable of handing out that defeat to Arsenal.
Right.
It seems a long time ago that Arsenal were challenging Leicester to win the league. In fact, didn't Arsenal were responsible for two of Leicester's three defeats?
That's right,
season.
Yeah. But, they won 5-2 in Leicester's title-winning season.
Yeah, I can't see that happening again. They might have five shots.
Well, also
they
might have five shots. Leicester have the best defence in the league with Sheffield United as well.
They've won four of their last five. They scored 22 goals in their last six. I mean, I could go on. And unlike Arsenal, Leicester look like a team who know what they're about.
Leicester look like Arsenal should look. Or did look some years ago. And, you know, with the pace of their attack, the speed of thought with the players that are going forward as well, the kind of youthful exuberance that they've got around the place as well. The only thing that's saving Emery just now is you look at the position, they're fifth, and then you look down the table and you look at Manchester United and you look at Spurs, and suddenly you think, well, wait now, where do you expect Arsenal actually to be? Probably fifth, not necessarily behind who they think they're behind at the moment, but, you know, so that's the only thing that's saving them. The thing that's damning for me is looking at the quality of players, particularly going forward, that they've got, and not doing better. Mm. The manager's number one, A1 job, above everything else, try and maximise what you've got on the field. Nowhere near He's getting nowhere near it at all. And if you've got Aubameyang, you've got, you know, the quality strikers all over that era, Pepe, etc.
Well, that's Arsenal fans' big issue at the moment is how cautious Emery is. If you know, if Arsenal take the lead, rather than saying, hey, look, we're quite good, let's go and dominate the game, he sits back and then invariably they concede. That game in midweek in Europe, Arsenal only had one successful pass into the box in the whole match, and it was for the goal.
And they had like 590 passes.
Yeah, they had loads of possession, but they're just, you know, knocking it about. I mean, it's that kind of ambition. It's they're playing like a small mid-table team rather than the Arsenal.
They're playing as though they want Wenger back.
He's out there.
Yeah.
And if they move quickly, maybe they could have him. They've had one win in the league since the end of September. That was against Bournemouth. And they're facing a Jamie Vardy who loves scoring a goal against Arsenal for some particular reason which escapes me.
And, yeah, this team is still undefeated at home as well. Mm. You know, the king power is very much the fortress, James, in this league so far.
Leicester could be second by the end of the weekend. All right, well, so could Chelsea, though, Pat. And you're going along to that game, aren't you? The game against Palace.
If I make it back from...
You're going on Friday night as well,
aren't you? I'm going to Norwich, Friday night. So... I'm interested in that one because they're going to be missing Mason Mount and as well as Roman Jorginho, and that's been a big part of their success so far this season. Interesting to see what Frank would do, but to be fair, I'll be honest with you, hands up, at the start of this season I was guessing 10th position. No, 8th, 9th for
really
Chelsea.
Really, for Chelsea?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, why not? He lost his best player last season.
Yeah.
He's got nobody in. He's got a whole bunch of kids coming through. You know, well, of course that makes sense. You know, it's a complete rebuild season, so... Looks like I was completely and utterly wrong in that one.
All right.
But, you know, this is another one. What's he going to do this weekend? And that will be one of the most interesting things of the weekend, what he does and what he changes in that.
I don't want to keep going on about Alan Pardew, but Lampard can become the first manager since Pardew to win 6 consecutive Premier League games. Pardew did it in 2012, so that's something for him to aim for.
Absolutely. Mr. Underscore says, nobody wants to start a backlash more than me about Chelsea, but what struck me was Abraham's woeful finishing against Ajax. Was that a big thing on Tuesday?
Well, I finished one that was, you know, was knocked off because it was offside. I didn't think he's finishing was particularly bad. Generally getting on the target most of the time. The numbers are good.
Right.
You know, still, so far, he's getting more chances.
Of course, when it comes to finishing, you can't look further than Crystal Palace with Christian Benteke and Wolf Zaha, who's not troubled the net for ages.
He's not troubled the net, but he's still playing incredibly well, and he's still having a massive effect in the game. And if he's not playing, they're missing it. But he is definitely the second most important guy for Palace, you know. And if without him... Come on, Roy Hodgson.
All right.
He's been great. You look at where Palace have managed to get in the league. I mean, it's mid-table just now, but they got they're 15 points. So 1 point off Sheffield, and we're glowing.
2 points off Arsenal, another team who could be fifth.
And I think with the limitations of the squad, goal scoring, the money that they spend, the fact that they've lost to players as well, that's all about structural organisation with the manager. I think he's done an amazing job.
They've done an amazing job, particularly on the road. Are they going to pull off another whopping upset at Stamford Bridge?
I think it's a kind of ugly one for Chelsea. I don't think it's the team they need just now. And of course, you know Chelsea are going to lose goals. So you suspect if Benteke's going to score, it's the one for him. I would still put Chelsea slight favourites. Well, more than slight favourites, but favourites to win this one.
Jordan Ayew loves nothing more than turning up the books in a game on the road. Mm-hmm. He could become the fourth Premier League player to score away at Arsenal, United and Chelsea, James.
Wow.
The other three are legends in their own right. Robbie Earle, Darren Bent, Ashley Barnes, who on the back of that was linked with a move to Chelsea. So I'm predicting in January, I think, you know, Frank Lampard will be going over to Marina and saying, get me Jordan Ayew.
Get me Jordan Ayew. Yeah. Brilliant. Okay, as I say, if Arsenal were to lose at Leicester, then Palace could take their place in fifth. Same can be said for, remarkably, Sheffield United, Bournemouth and Brighton, whose chances we'll be discussing next. Brighton, Man United series of South Coast teams beginning with B continues. Mm. Fresh from their defeat at Bournemouth, they host Brighton Sunday at Old Trafford. Duncan.
Yeah, the men with the feet of clay taking on Potter. Which is a nice little touch. But yeah, I mean, this has got all the hallmarks of a, you know, narrow Manchester United win that is then spun as a kind of return to form.
Right. That's remarkable. Yeah, United lost 3-2 against Brighton away last season. Brighton, though, never won at Old Trafford, but it's the kind of season where you can imagine them changing that.
My money's on Man United for this one.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why is that, Pat?
Been to see them a couple of times this season. Against
which games did you see?
Against West Ham United, they stunk the place out. Yeah. They were awful. And against Newcastle United, they stunk the place out. They were absolutely awful. Mm. But having watched the games, looking at, and everyone who'd been watching it on TV kept on saying the same thing, Rashford's not moving. His movement's terrible. And I'm watching the game going, his movement's absolutely fantastic. It's just that Man United are so incredibly slow at moving that ball forward.
Right.
And it's physically painful to say this. Really hurts me to say this. I'm almost crouched over it saying it. Juan Mata was the problem, partially, because he was playing 10 and everything was going through him and it was going slow, or else they were getting somebody just to mark him out of the game. And I love Juan Mata dearly, and I still think he's a great player, but not in that system that Man United were playing him. So everything was slowed down. By the time they got the ball forward, Rashford's marked, running into a bunch of players. They've changed it against Liverpool. Mm. They're now moving it forward quicker, not lumping it, moving it forward quicker. Rashford, they're going, oh, look, his movement's good. That's what he was doing all along. It's just
but
that they're playing it now.
Martial coming in as well. Which,
yeah, I agree.
Right.
And okay. Brighton haven't won away from home since the start of the season. First game, and that was against bottom of the table Watford.
They did manage that draw away at Newcastle.
They did, but they failed to score in three of their last four as well,
true.
James.
They also had a really good game at Man City. They lost heavily, but if you looked underneath, yeah, the performance was really
good. The KPIs
were off the scale, and Pep Guardiola, he is one to, you know, congratulate teams after they've been beaten heavily. Yes, but he was complimentary, and Brighton did actually have a lot of shots in that game. You know, I think.
If Atalanta are like the dentist, what a Brighton.
Chiropodist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of medical things, Matic, Shaw and Pogba are all still out. And word that Pogba might actually have a metatarsal problem, we hear.
Mm.
You know, sly back channel rumours. But so that's not saying that's been officially confirmed, but it's been a while he's been out, and it looks like he's set to be out for a while. Yeah, Ashley Young, meantime, is suspended. Pat is confident, though, that Man United will bounce back from Bournemouth with a victory there. What about Sheffield United then and their visit Saturday afternoon to Spurs? The Spurs fan Johnny B says, do not change the midfield or forwards on Saturday. Feeling there that Pochettino stumbled on a winning formula at last, or indeed divined a winning formula.
Stumbled. I mean, I've still got a problem having been put through that game at Goodison Park on Sunday.
Right.
And how dreadful Spurs and Everton were. Neither team get anything.
So what was the key to the way he set up? Lo Celso coming in?
I think so. I didn't see the whole of that game. So you would probably have seen it much more.
James was all over it for the goal show.
Yeah, I was impressed by Ndombele. I thought his driving runs from midfield, it is a Red Star side that is pretty average but caused them problems. But the balance seemed to be right. And of course, Son, who was so shaken up by what happened at the weekend, scored twice, was very apologetic in his celebrations. But I wouldn't say it's moved on from that, but it hasn't affected his ability to score goals for them.
And it hasn't affected his ability to take the field this Saturday, because the Premier League, after explaining very specifically that he was guilty as charged because there'd been a serious injury after his tackle, have now kind of forgotten that bit and taken that red card away. So I don't know. Anyway, Pat, as you mentioned, you did see the game against Everton, which looked rubbish. They've only taken 24 points from their last 23 Premier League games, Spurs, which is not great. If you're interested in the Uncle Jeff coefficient for Spurs, then you'll be, as I am, indebted to Nathaniel Custer, who's emailed us from Washington, D.C. His uncle's called Art, and he's a Spurs fan, and he's calculated the points from equivalent fixtures this season and last fixture, and apparently Spurs have the biggest point swing on the uncle scale. They're down 11 points on last year in the equivalent fixtures. That's rotten, isn't it?
And they're in 11th as well, James.
Okay.
Yeah. They've played 11
and
games.
And they play 11 players.
Well, hang on. You've stumbled on some sort of...
Right. So, by the way, there's more of this and even more important numbers in a special Nick Miller piece on thetotallyfootballshow.com. If, like me, you think that's great, we know about West Ham and Spurs now, but how are the rest of the league doing compared to the same fixtures last year? You can find that information on thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Sheffield United impressive on the road, James. Mm. Unbeaten still as well, which, yeah, for a promoted side is pretty impressive. And they've scored in all but one of those games as well.
Joint best defence in the Premier League, as you mentioned before.
They've only lost one away game in the whole of the year. Only Liverpool could match that.
They're actually the crest of a wave thing that they're riding just now is everyone's not used to them. It's good. By the second half of the season, they'll see this three at the back stuff. They'll see the different things they're doing, and they will find an analytical way to stop them. So it might be harder the second part of the season for Sheffield United.
Right. Do you think this Saturday will be too early for Pochettino to come up with a plan against them?
I'm so blighted by seeing the game last Sunday, I wouldn't have backed Spurs for anything.
Right.
But Eriksen scored the fourth goal, I believe, over at against Red Star. And I think he's a big player for them. If they can get his head right and get him playing, I think Spurs can do anything. They can go in any sort of run. And I'm delighted to see Son back because, you know, I was 20 yards away from that horrific incident when it happened. And I'm looking down there and he was so, so, so upset, you know, as was Aurier as well. And I actually didn't think he would be able to play. He didn't. His mind was right to play.
Delighted as well to see that Andre Gromer's posting pictures of himself smiling. Mm. Which I'm not, I presume were taken after the successful operation.
He's been in to see Everton players.
Has he?
Yeah, he's been back into the club to see them. So yesterday.
That's
brilliant, yeah. It's this thing about serious looking injuries.
Right.
It's not about how serious they look.
Well, I don't know how serious it looks because I
don't look at it.
But I heard you on Monday say, and everyone said they didn't watch it.
Yeah, you did.
I did. Yeah, I don't know why because I've deeply regretted it.
Did you seek it out or?
I accidentally saw it and then I chose to watch it again, and that was not a good idea. But it was, yeah, it was a
was
proper.
Was it about the worst you've seen in a long time?
I think the David Boost one is worst. Although
I remember a Ciro Ferrara way down, was it the rain in Lecce? This is years ago. Mm-hmm. That was similarly wrong looking.
And he's been back on Dancing with the Stars in Italy.
So there you go.
So right,
yeah. Slid it off.
It's all about the either the cleanness of the break, and this was a dislocation, which is what makes it look
unwell
vile.
Already.
Yeah. But you know, my one that I remember was Henrik Larsson had the most horrendous one.
What about Kazuragi?
He came back just as good.
Kazuragi didn't, though, did he? But then I guess that was different, different football, different doctors. Mm. Anyway, best of luck to Andre Gomes. Everton without him have a big game coming up this weekend. They are taking on Southampton. Those are the two teams on either side of that crucial dotted line down the bottom end of the table. 3 points between them. Everton in 17th place, and Saints in 18th. Saints' last home game went well, didn't it?
Nine. Was it only the nine?
Only the
that
nine.
That was a 10-man thing.
Well, they conceded fewer goals in the second half than the first, so they're on an upward trajectory.
Right, okay.
And of course, they had a bit of a go next week, and they didn't play a bad team. To be fair, I'm looking at Evan, and on all the years that I've been playing and doing stuff after the football, talking about football, I've never said the phrase, the manager must go at all. I've never said that phrase.
Yeah.
Until now.
I am unbelievably close.
Why?
Because Silva's team has got enough good players in it. There's enough good players there for that team to be, if they were organised and playing well, they would be in the top six. And there they are in 17th position, and they are playing stinking football. And I was sitting in the Goodison Park watching it, and you know, I'm there not to support any team or be part of any team. That is the quietest I have ever heard Goodison Park in my entire life. 10 minutes before the half time, it got quieter after that injury, strangely enough. But the fans, it looked as if they chucked it, and they couldn't even bring themselves to boo how bad it was, and they're as if they're just waiting for the hangman to turn up
for the international break, basically. Yeah.
He needs to do something in this game. I'd be amazed if they keep him on longer than a couple of games if they don't get a really good run together, and it's hard to see where that's going to come from.
Right, okay. Key match, that one, down at that end of the table. Similarly placed to Newcastle. They're only a point better off than Everton. They're hosting Bournemouth, hoping to get another home win in the can to go with their similarly positioned manager.
It's the longitude classico, this one, the most southerly ever Premier League team versus the most northerly.
Is that right?
And just to go a little bit deeper, I looked at, you can get from Howe, Indiana in America, to Bruce, Wisconsin, in, according to Google, around the same time as you can get from Bournemouth to Newcastle.
By which means of transport?
On road.
Okay.
See, when you're talking just now about the whole American thing in Newcastle, Can I make a suggestion there? Newcastle start playing a more gridiron game and special teams.
Okay.
Because they only score from set pieces.
Okay.
And, you know, they should play just for corners and just for free kicks.
Okay. Here's a Jefferson Lerma stat. Bournemouth's Jefferson Lerma has picked up 17 yellows in 42 games. That's remarkable. He is suspended for this weekend, so he can't do it this time around, luckily. Friday night, the weekend kicks off. Pat, you're going to be there as Norwich. Who's taking on who?
It's the bottom of the table, isn't it? Norwich-Watford.
It's the Norwich-Watford game. Wow.
It's the Survivor Series.
Wow. And those bottom three currently 3 points adrift of the rest. Saints on 8, Norwich on 7, Watford on 5. Wow. I mean, it could be a championship fixture next season.
It could be, but I also think it'll be quite a good game.
Right.
Generally, you go and watch Norwich, and I think they're a good team to watch. They're attack-minded. I like some of the players. Certainly Cantwell is a player that I think in time will be pretty special. Some memories of a wee bit of Grealish about him. You know, there's a bit to learn, a bit to come up, but eventually it'll come together for him and he could be a pretty special player.
What about Norwich? Will they sell any Hoovers door-to-door this weekend, do you think?
He's looking at me again. You're throwing these in at me and I'm missing them.
This is Daniel Farker, the visionary Norwich manager, who suggested after last weekend's result that they needed to be going out there and knocking on doors like a door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman.
They need to suck it up.
Is that how people buy their vacuum cleaners?
No.
That's how I got mine.
Is it?
Yeah.
I mean, the vacant look's still here.
Right. Well, no, and to be fair, I don't think any of us really know, but that's what makes him special. So, not working out too well right now for Norwich. 5 defeats in 6.
Also, Bookie hasn't scored in 6 games, has he?
Yeah.
Bookie?
Bookie.
Yeah.
I mean,
19 shots he's had since he last scored.
Really? There's this song which is kind of almost top of the charts in Italy, which I think if he was to listen to it.
Former French number one, Pookie, Pookie, Pookie.
Yes.
One, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's in terms of goal music, why do they not play this at Carrow Road?
Because he doesn't score. That's the answer. Okay, also down the wrong end of the table, you've got Midlands Derby on Sunday's Wolves take on Villa. Wolves, who are currently 12th, so they're not doing too badly. But Villa are down, tied on points with Everton in 16th place. Jack Grealish should be back for that game. Apparently, Bennett and Doherty are both out for Wolves, who have come from 1-0 down to draw 1-1 6 times this season. How about that?
If they draw this one 1-1, it'll be first team since Spurs in 2008 to do 4 in a row 1-1.
Also, as Duncan rightly pointed out, the most dangerous scoreline, 1-0.
Mm-hmm.
I very, very quickly have to say something about Villa. I love Villa, right? And I love watching Villa. They're so exciting. They're having a great season. But and Everton are having a terrible season. How does that work out when both of them are on 11 points?
Well, I guess it's about expectations.
Or the way you're playing.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's a fair answer.
I would argue that.
So Dean Villa, Smith can stay.
Villa have thrown away more points than any other team this season. So they've got into good positions. They've looked quite good. And then they haven't quite had the wherewithal to see it out. But yeah, I think I've enjoyed watching them this season.
Very upset if they don't get out of this. And they're actually now in it. And I hope they get out of it. They deserve to get out of it.
Okay. The other game this weekend is a claret and blue off at Turf Moor as West Ham visit Burnley. Burnley have actually lost their last 3 and are conceding goals all over the shop. West Ham's record isn't that impressive either. Lost 3 of their last 5 and they drew the other 2. So there you have it.
I would add to that game is I think the 2 teams are not very enjoyable to watch just now. So in an unusual move, I think they should both wear their home kits for this one.
Okay.
And it looks as if they're all just the same team.
Brilliant.
Really confusing.
Okay. It's been that kind of week, Pat. You wouldn't rule it out. Let's get some odds on some of those games coming up this weekend. Here's producer Ben talking to Paddy Power.
Thank you very much, Jimbo. It's Lee Price from Paddy Power on the line, listeners, as he always is. And Lee, let's kick off with the big one here. It's Liverpool versus City on Sunday at Anfield. What's going to happen here?
Yeah, the big one. And this is pretty extraordinary. We price it completely even. Liverpool 6-4 to win. Man City the exact same price, 6-4. The draw is 5-2, which makes our money back special an interesting one this week. We're offering money back as a free bet on all markets if Man City beat Liverpool. And that applies to all markets, pre-match singles, max free bet £10, T&Cs apply.
We've been talking very positively about Sheffield United, so what are the odds on them, please, beating Spurs this weekend?
Well, I'm loath to write Sheffield United off. We've done that once already this season, pre-season, saying odds on they get relegated, of course. Now they're more likely to finish in the top 10 by our markets. but they are 5-1 to win this match. Tottenham bounce back midweek with a good win, and they're 1-2 to win again on the weekend. The draw here is 3-1.
So that's the Blades. What about the Seagulls? They're up against Man United. Can they make history?
Maybe. I'm always a little bit sceptical of betting on United when they're odds on this season. But our traders seem convinced it's 8-15 they win here. Brighton to win at Old Trafford is 5-1. The draw is 11-4. I often talk about a double chance, and again, that could be value here. Brighton not to lose away at Man United is 13-10.
And finally, Lee, this might be the last we see of Unai Emery. Arsenal are at Leicester. Give us some numbers on this one, please.
Our traders are convinced by Leicester, and I am too. I'm almost making it a nap of the weekend. It's 10-11 the Foxes win this one, and potentially move to second in the table. Arsenal, almost the opposite is true for them. It's 13-5 they win, the same price for a draw. It's odds on Jamie Vardy scores. God knows how he's going to mock Gunnosaurus, though. Very excited to see it either way.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Brune says, outfield players on goals, best performances in goals, I think there, Brune. Best performances ever. Also have inter-banished Italian stereotypes, good defences. Ask Pat, who he thinks is a good fit for Easter Road manager's gig. Crikey, Brune's really piled in there with the questions. All right, who for...
Easter Road, I'll take Gordon Strachan. I'll take David Moyes. I'm aiming high here. As right. said, I wish they would have taken the guy that I provided for them a year or two ago.
Who's that?
Stevie Clark.
All right. But they didn't.
They didn't.
Right. No, Inter banished Italian stereotypes. Agree, disagree, James?
Inter?
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at their second halves in Barcelona and in Dortmund, yes, but they're coming up against very good sides. I would say, on the whole, that is a very good defensive unit. So, right. No, Atalanta maybe, yes, just because they play such attacking, crazy, gung-ho football. Mm. Just like dentists do all over the country.
So yeah. So attacking they can't score past Kyle Walker.
Right. Yeah, it's true.
Do you want to answer the other? Do you want to handle the outfield players in goals?
I think my favourite in the Premier League era is Vinnie Jones doing it for Wimbledon.
Oh, yeah.
Away at Newcastle. Made a couple of good saves, actually quite good saves. And then for no reason at all, starts juggling the ball with his feet on the edge of the box. And then as a striker comes to closing down, he just leathers it as hard as he can into the sky. So it's
brilliant,
quite iconic.
As so much of what Vinny did is. Excellent. Around the continent, some big games coming up this weekend. Juve taking on Milan. While in the Bundesliga, not quite as big a game, that Italian one, as it might have been a year or two ago. Milan in all sorts of trouble.
Or 10 years ago.
Or even 10 years ago, yeah. Yeah, indeed. But Juve, a top of the table, a point ahead of Inter as we head into this round of matches. Milan very much not so. But in the Bundesliga, woohoo! Der Klassiker, because fourth place Bayern Munich are taking on second place Borussia Dortmund in what will be Hansi Flick's second game in charge as their interim manager. But the big chat, pretty much everywhere, is about who's going to be the long-term replacement for the departed Niko Kovac on the Bayern bench. A lot of people seem to cool themselves out of this particular race. Ralf Rangnick was doing it. Thomas Tuchel, the PSG manager. One person hasn't.
Sean Dyche.
Wenger's just going to hang Arsene around long Wenger. Enough.
He speaks German. He's available.
He's an Alsatian.
He is an Alsatian.
From the
the region of the Alsace. Nicely done. Opinion is divided on where Bayern stand on the desirability of bringing Wenger in as a short-term solution. I say long-term, but essentially till the end of the season, because what they really want to do is bring across Ajax's brilliant boss, Erik ten Hag.
Could I have two things. Number one, he's an Alsatian, right? They need somebody to bring them all together. What they need is a German shepherd.
Nice.
Is that not the same thing?
Yeah.
I think it probably is. I look at that team just now, and it's really strange. It's just complete change time, isn't it, for Bayern? It's time for an utter change. And do you want to do that with a short-term manager, or do you want to get someone like Ten Hag in who changes
the
entire...
Well, they want to, but he won't leave Ajax certainly this season. But he has Bayern history.
He does. He coached the youth team round about when Pep Guardiola was there. And I think this is what the Bayern players kind of waiting for, found lacking in the successors to Pep Guardiola, in that none of them have had the kind of sophisticated coaching methods that they had come accustomed to under Pep.
Wait till they meet Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
All right, magnificent. It's going to be interesting to see who takes over that job. For now, it is Hansi Flick who's in charge was in charge for a fairly underwhelming performance midweek against Olympiakos. But be an interesting game, that one. They're at home to Borussia Dortmund Saturday, 5:15. Brilliant. We're off to Dublin and then Belfast this weekend. Pat, where are you off to in the wide world of football?
Well, it's Norwich and then it's Chelsea. Of and then I'm finally going to get home for the first time in 6 days.
Excellent. All right. James, how about you? Are you off to Italy?
No, not this week. I was going to go for Juventus Milan, but I'm going to do some reporting in the international break instead.
Nice. Nicely done. Whatever you get up to, listener, make sure you join us on Monday when Michael Cox, Carl Anker and Sasha Gurionov will be joining us to look back on Liverpool City and the rest. In the meantime, have yourselves a great weekend.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter. And make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.